If you're like me, you probably have a closet full of local band merch. And whether you know it or not, a lot of that band merch was probably made by Divine Shirt Company right here in Winnipeg. Divine Shirt Company has made all of the Great Witch Police merch, from our hoodies to our toques to our t-shirts. And if you're looking to get anything done, like screen printing, embroidery, graphic design, digital printing, go to see Divine Shirt Company at divineshirtcompany.ca and tell them Witch Police Radio sent you.
One of our colleagues, Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Get up off your ass and get up on the podcast! Witch Police Radio! Witch Police Radio! Witch Police Radio! Witch Police Radio! Get up off your ass and get up on the podcast! Witch Police Radio!
All right, welcome to Witch Police Radio. I am back again on the internet, as we always are, because we live in this dystopian future where none of us can see each other face to face. And I'm here with a returning guest. I think this would be your third appearance on the show in maybe 4 years, 5 years or so. And I have a lot of things I want to talk to you about, because it's been a while, and I'm always happy to see you and have you on the podcast. But to start this off, if you want to just introduce yourself and give a bit of background about what it is that you do for people who might not be familiar with your project.
Good afternoon. My name is Chris Friesen, and I perform music under the name of Freaking Snap, where I take this little yellow machine that makes sounds, and I make sounds with it.
That's a pretty good way of explaining it. And I mean, before we get into anything that's going on now, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. I know we always kind of had like a joking competition of who will reach which episode number or album number first, but I think you're ahead of me now by quite a bit, right?
I'm I can't remember exactly what number I'm at in terms of released, but I'm at 798.
Wow.
For what's recorded and named.
Okay. So correct me if I'm wrong, but did you have eventually, at some point you had an endpoint for this, right? You had like a goal you were trying to hit in terms of how much music you were going to be releasing. Is that still out there, that goal?
The goal is still there because at this point I haven't hit it. But we'll see. It's honestly one of those things where it's really going to depend on how I feel when I actually hit that goal.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like the goal is to fill up entirely one of those old school 160 gig iPods.
Yeah.
Like the iPod Classic. You know, fill that sucker up completely. That's the goal.
Do you think you can stop, though? Like, assuming you hit that goal, are you not going to be just compelled to keep making this stuff? I mean, you've been doing it for how many years now?
I think in March it'll be 7 years, maybe six, either 6 or 7 years. But yeah, I didn't think I was actually going to hit the goal at all. And now it looks like it's actually an achievable thing.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Does that change the plans, though, now that you actually, this goal that probably seemed at one point like way too far off to even contemplate is now like, you know, potentially a reality? Does that change your outlook on this whole idea in the first place?
Not really, because I essentially actually only came up with the goal about halfway through of what's already been done, you know, like to kind of contemplate, you know, there's a finite thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to, yeah, this is just a thing that just goes on for whenever. I thought it would be funny to, you know, put out there that I have a finite goal. There's a finite amount of Freaking Snap that will exist. Now with, you know, life, who knows?
Could be Freaking Snap forever. I like it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Recording stopped.
I just need to pause for a second. My dog is chewing on a bone in the background. I don't know if you can hear it, but it's like really loud in my ear. I'm going to kick her upstairs. I'll be right back. Not actually kick her, you know what I mean. Yeah. Hang on. Dude. Get out of here with a bone. Come on, it's too loud. Upstairs, go on, upstairs. We'll crush this. Sorry, she's just crunching like a maniac. It's way too loud. All right. I'm gonna hit go again, and we'll get back into this.
Recording in progress.
So, I guess, I don't know how much you want to talk about this, but like, one of the things that I think is awesome about you lately is that we talked about this online, you have the positive mental attitude, and you're like a living, breathing Bad Brain song right now, in the sense that you seem super pumped about everything. And even just doing this, you seem super pumped about doing it, which is awesome. And like, so you, I don't know, it almost seems like you're like born again or something, but not in a religious way, you know what I mean?
Oh, I know exactly what you mean. It's one of those things where it's like, I was thinking about it all, you know, all day today. It's like, will I discuss my heart surgery?
Well, I just brought it up, so sorry. Yeah, I think you might have to now.
But it's one of those things where it's like, I have absolutely zero issues talking about what happened. And
I have a reason for bringing it up too. So, but keep going.
Okay, but it's one of those things where it's like it's come up in so many different kinds of conversation over the last 5 months now. Yeah, when was September? Was that 5 months ago?
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So heart surgery in September. And all kinds of conversations about it, whether it's been, you know, talking about, you know, what actually happened versus, you know, just, you know, joking about it, because it's one of those things where it's like, I personally feel that if you can't joke about it, you're not really moving on from it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, whether it's, you know, a relationship that ended, if you can't joke about it, you know, 5 years down the road, you haven't really moved past it. You're still, you know, something is still clicking inside your head about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like literally I had a issue with my heart at some point in time. It started and it's really went so gradually that I just thought it was this is how Chris gets old, with what it was doing symptomatically.
Yeah.
And, you know, like to go into the hospital to get something checked out and then go, yeah, your heart's not working properly, wasn't a huge surprise genetically, but at the time was a massive surprise, because I thought my body was falling apart from something else entirely.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, like, bless those healthcare workers for, you know, taking, you know, my symptoms and going, this is what it is. That does not sound like what you think it is.
Yeah.
We're going to test these things and we're going to put you under observation for a couple of days in the hospital, and thusly found out that my aortic valve was pumping at 15%.
That's horrible.
Yeah. Then and
news to get, obviously. Yeah.
Well, exactly. But even then, you know, because my brain has already has always been, you know, like, I guess, for the longest time, slowly getting less oxygen, or whatever it is that the heart pumps to your brain.
Mm-hmm.
It was going down so gradually to that 15% that I was getting more bitter, more cynical, more annoyed with the world in general. Yeah. more so than just being, oh, stupid world. It was actually like I was not in good places mentally in a lot of ways. Like I was like I explained to somebody, it was like I could still feel joy with stuff, like when we bumped into each other at Mariachi Ghost at Sittinaboyan Park there.
Yeah, it was cool.
I enjoyed the shit out of that show.
Yeah.
And that was literally that was a week and a half before I went to the hospital. Thank you. So, you know, right up to it, I could still feel joy and happiness about stuff, but, you know, deep down, I was really in a really, really angry, dark, bitter place. And I discovered that, thanks to my surgery, that a lot of that anger was because I wasn't getting proper oxygen and blood and everything else pumped to my brain. Because I literally woke up from surgery looking at my brother in the hospital room and going, I'm pretty sure it's not the drugs, but it might be. But I'm pretty sure it's not, but holy crap. My brain feels light and I feel really good about stuff.
Yeah.
And my brother looked at me and goes, it's the drugs. I'm like, no, I don't know for sure, but I've taken some drugs that should make me feel the way that I feel right now, and they've never even come close.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, okay, yeah, totally get that. And it's like, I've been on a cloud living, just going, I'm alive and I'm living and it's awesome.
It's good to see too. It's good to see like the amount of positivity coming from you just on a regular basis on social media. Even it's, you can see it, right? It like shines through on everything you're doing, your videos and photos and everything. It's like, you seem pumped to be here and to be just doing whatever you're doing.
Well, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, life is actually pretty rad.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Yeah.
Like there's a lot of really, really fucking cool things about life.
Yeah.
There's a lot of shitty things out there going on in life, but there's a lot of really fucking cool stuff, and it's pretty fucking awesome to feel really good about that.
Yeah.
Like it's hard to describe how much everything has changed.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, is the mustache part of this too? Is that like the happy man mustache that now you, cause it seems like you're stuck to that since the surgery, right?
Well, I had it long before.
I guess so. Yeah. I guess you did. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's one of those things where it's like I will fully admit that I shaved off my beard and left the mustache because I thought it would be hilarious. It's one of those things where I do personally think that mustaches are one of the most ridiculous things in the world.
Yeah.
So therefore, me being ridiculous about something is completely on brand.
Totally.
I like. And it. So I just kept it for a long time, and like I was actually disappointed. Part of one of the things that kind of disappointed me about being in the hospital was that the beard grew back.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You were there for a while. Yeah. Yeah.
Cause yeah, like literally from August 24th until September 24th, I was in a hospital.
Yeah.
So, and you know, it's like trying to be as, have as little stuff around you as possible.
Yeah.
You know, so you're not carrying a bunch of crap around all over the place. You know, shaver. I can just stay at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's more important that I have a couple of books to read than to have my shaver. Who cares?
Yeah.
Like when it came down to it, like when they needed to put in an IV, like, because I had an IV that was in my neck.
Oh yeah.
When they needed to put that in, they just shaved part of the, you know, the hair that was around there. They just got rid of it.
Yeah.
It's like, they're like, do you care? Is it going to be a bad thing if we do that? I'm like, no, I don't care.
Just stick it in there. Yeah.
Exactly. It was like, just, you know, do what you got to do. Like, well, I really don't care. And then they're like, but it's your beard. And I'm like, yeah, it's hair. It's going to grow back.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think one of the things about your music that, for me anyway, it's hard to, it's, I know every piece you do is they're based on things. The titles are specific to, you know, whether it's where you are, what your mindset is at the time, things like that, named after people in many cases. Has the tone of what you're doing changed at all since this, as far as creativity goes? Because I think it's, I use this word too much, but you have a kind of a nebulous thing that you do where it's sort of hard to necessarily, I mean, if you were singing, it'd be like, okay, he's singing about life in a different way now than maybe he did, you know, 6 months ago or whatever, but you're making blips and bloops with a little yellow box, like you said. Has that, like, have you noticed a difference as far as what you're creating since you've sort of had a change of mindset?
It's sort of difficult to really say. Like, I find that I'm not recording as much.
Okay, that was my next question.
As I was before, but I'm still recording a lot. But I think part of that's just, you know, the going out and living and doing stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like before I actually felt like going out and doing stuff, instead of that, I just sat down on the floor and just recorded. So, you know, like if you're not inspired to go out at all, you're just going to just sit and continue and continue. Whereas now it's like, I'm actually going out and doing stuff, so I'm not recording as much, but I have had a couple of friends say things like, have you gotten something new that you're recording with? And I'm like, no, why? And they're like, because it sounds a little different. And I'm like, I'm kind of grasping at straws to figuring out exactly what's different about it. But apparently, you know, to a couple other people, it does sound legitimately different than it did before.
Okay.
Like that I was actually using a brand new piece of gear, whereas I'm still using the same yellow box with the same other chaos fiddly diddly thingy as I have been for the last 3 or 4 years.
For the last 600 or 700 albums.
And then exactly. So there is like, I don't know, like it's nebulous.
Yeah. Like that, I really like that word. I do use it too much, but I like it a lot. Yeah.
If you use it too much, then I say fuck too much.
it's probably true. It's probably true.
It's probably very true.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe that kind of brings up a different question then. Because I was talking to a guy on a recent episode that will be out by the time people hear this, who plays improvisational guitar stuff. It's just solo, just with guitar, and every piece is improvised. And it reminded me of what you do. I mean, different equipment, obviously, but the same concept, right? He's not doing maybe as much output as you've done, but it's the same idea in the sense that it's him, one piece of equipment, and he's just making up what comes out, and that's the music, right? But we had kind of a long discussion about sort of tone and conveying tone and conveying emotion and stuff through this limited... And this guy doesn't use a lot of pedals or anything either. It's just straight up a guitar with clean tone. And just the idea of kind of putting feeling into something that is difficult to do because you are limited, I guess, in your tools. And I may have even asked you this before, but I always wonder this about electronic music especially, because it's so machine-like, yet it is possible to put feeling behind it and do something that is emotional and is that kind of resonates, despite the fact that, you know, in your case, you're using a limited little yellow box, and it's whatever its range of sounds is, right?
Yeah. No, it's you have asked the question about, you know, like the emotional sound of something before. And you know, I consider it, you know, to be in the same way as, like, yes, a guitar is a acoustic instrument, but it's still a machine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so to take a machine and make something sound joyful or something more sound mournful, it's all in knowing how to utilize that machine. Like, I find, you know, talking about, you know, like technical musical theory in terms of actual theory and actual theories of improvisation,
mm-hmm.
For me are completely lost, because I just throw everything out the kitchen sink and just press buttons, as it were.
Yeah.
And I was like that when I was using a bass guitar with a bunch of effects pedals back with the Broken Orchestra stuff, and it's all in how you utilize what you're using.
Mm-hmm.
And I just heard in my brain right now a friend on Twitter going, utilize, fuck that word, it's awful.
It is awful. Yeah.
And I was like, and I'm just sitting there going, oh damn it, I just used it.
You just utilized it.
Exactly. But you know, it's like, technically speaking, it's not a bad word, it's just overutilized.
Yes You got it again. Yeah.
Yeah.
See how many utilize we can fit into this podcast. Yeah,
exactly. But no, it's like, it's like, you know, you can make, like, you know, you just look at a piano. You can make that piano sound absolutely joyful and like a 3 or 4 year old that just got a shit ton of candy,
yep,
plopped right in front of their face. And they're like, oh my God, this is the greatest day ever. Versus sounding like the worst sounding, sad, pathetic, whatever,
mm-hmm,
because the world has gone to shit. You know, it's like piano, guitar, tiny little yellow box. It's how you use them as opposed to what they are.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Because, I mean, yeah, there's nothing that really distinguishes your yellow box from one of those instruments, because it's still emitting sound, right? And you're still doing something to manipulate it to make those sounds. So, yeah, it's maybe not as traditionally recognized as those other instruments are in terms of having the capacity for sounding sad or happy or angry or whatever. But, yeah, you're right. It's just another machine that you're pressing buttons on and sound comes out.
Yeah. Mine has three buttons and a pad that you can move your finger on. A guitar has, you know, between, well, however many strings you want to have on it.
Yeah.
Based on what kind of guitar it is, where it's either 6-string or a 12-string.
Yeah.
You can have however many strings you want on it. If you want to take off half the strings of a 12-string and just make them and take them off randomly, so be it.
You can still make music with
it. But
that,
it's like, exactly. You've still got the strings on this piece of wood that makes sound. My little yellow box is just thing that if you put 4 AA batteries into the back of it and turn it on, it makes sound.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like every once in a while I sit there and, you know, think to myself, like, wow, I'm cheating a lot by utilizing, you know, these different drum patterns that are actually like programmed into the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I try to just chop the shit out of those things before anybody can recognize what it is, because there's only 10 of them. And if you're familiar with any Korg Chaos products, you know these pre-programmed things, because they've all got them.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, you know, Patrick Michaelishan, could make everything that I make with the machine that he has in his house.
But the cool thing is it's that he does something completely different, which is awesome.
You know, it's isn't it the same thing with Chris Mama Bauer?
Yeah.
Like some of his stuff is made with an extremely similar machine. So it's like, it's pretty cool.
It is cool. I mean, you keep making these records and you've had one of the things that's come up repeatedly over and over again to the point where I'm sick of talking about it over the past 2 years is just the idea of this shitstorm we're all in with the pandemic and people trying to be creative during this thing. And you have the advantage of it's just you and the little yellow box. So I'm assuming you haven't fallen into some of the same struggles that other artists have because you're not necessarily meeting other people to record with. You don't have to jam with anybody. You can record on your own time in your own comfort of your home or wherever you are. Like, has there been any kind of, aside from the obvious with your situation medically you've been through, but has there been any change as far as like your output during this time, or has it been business as usual for Freaking Snap?
The thing is really funny because at the start of the first lockdown, like way back at the start, I put out one thing a day. Until that first, quote unquote reopening, and I can't remember exactly how many things that was, but it was one of those things where it's like, yep, this is what I'm going to entertain myself with during the lockdown.
Right, because no one knew how long it was going to be.
Exactly. It was like, I constantly recording and everything else, I had a huge backlog of things that it was like, it was super simple.
Yeah.
And, one of the things that I found funny was I could have released something like, I think it was three things a week while I was in the hospital.
Yeah.
And I still would not have run out of my backlog of stuff.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's a lot of backlog.
And it's just like, I find it just as ridiculous as everybody else does, but it's just, it's what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. One. Well, and you don't seem to have any sign of stopping, which is cool. I know it's been a while probably since you've played any kind of a show. Do you think that you'll be doing shows at some point in the future? I mean, does whatever the new world is going to look like as far as how venues happen and performances happen, do you think you'll be getting out there much, or do you think it'll be more sort of basement shows and weird little things like that? Not that there's anything wrong with those. I really love those. But
it's like, I really don't know. Like, I played a show in November with the inflatable band and Ponema.
Yeah, it was a great lineup, and wish I had remembered what the date was because I missed it. But
no, it was it was really cool. Like, because we just, it was right in between, you know, things sort of easing up a bit, and then the Transformers virus.
Yeah. Yeah, there was that break. There was that brief break, yeah, until Optimus Prime showed up,
It was right in the middle of that, and, like, it was weird seeing, you know, after going out to restaurants and whatnot over, you know, however long, and most of it usually being, like, you know, half full.
Yeah.
It was weird seeing a bunch of people in an enclosed space close together like that. Like, it was nowhere near as intense as the propaganda show.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say we were both at that show, and that was like next level. That was crowded.
That was devastatingly, like, crushingly good as a show.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah,
in so many ways, and yet still feeling really claustrophobic because you're around, you know, you're around so many people
and you're all masked, and it's,
you haven't, you know, just like as much as everybody was masked and double vaxxed and everything else, it was just like, this is the first time I've been around a lot of people in a really long time.
Yeah, same with me for sure.
This is kind of sketchy in my brain.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like so yeah, like the show that I played was, It was interesting because there was quite a few people there. Like there was no, like, I think capacities were at 75% or something like that at the time. So it felt pretty full, but it wasn't packed.
Yeah.
And it was also really weird being at a show and seeing everybody wearing a mask while they're, like, if they were standing up watching whoever play.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, that's a new thing, but it was also really cool seeing that there was no issues with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I was like, and it was just really awesome playing on a stage. So, you know, it's like, that's, I think that's probably my number one thing about it, was like, it's just really cool being on a stage playing whatever loudly.
Yeah. Yeah.
For people that are in the audience. And that's why I want a Mouthboat reunion.
I would love to have a Mouthboat reunion. If we ever do it, you can play, you can open for sure. We make that happen. But yeah. No,
we've got it on the podcast. It's happening.
Right now it has to happen. I have to get those other guys to come back from the other ends of the country and just to relearn all the songs. Yeah. Yeah.
Just make stuff up. It's easier that way.
It's much easier that way. Yeah. Yeah. I know I've asked you this before.
It just yellow, dark and stormy night a lot.
Yeah. That happens a lot. Yeah. Yeah. That's that I remember the words for that one, but the music part is hard, but no, I'm sure I've asked you this before, but I mean, for someone who's hearing this and has never heard your engage with your music in any way before, they've never seen you play live, they've never heard any of the hundreds of recordings, how do you get into this? Like, do you just encourage them to just check out the newest one, or do you have, like, it's so vast catalog that it's daunting. I mean, even as someone who has once bought one of your records on Bandcamp, I get emails every time you release something new. And it's daunting just looking at all the emails, because I know I haven't come anywhere near catching up to, you know, like, it's, I can't, I don't, I physically can't catch up to all this output you're doing. So, I mean, someone who's never heard you before and wants to check it out, what do they do? Like, is it, it seems like it would be terrifying to approach that catalog.
Well, there is that, but like personally, I think that if you listen to any of the live performances,
yeah,
whether they're at CFR or Handsome Daughter or at my friend Mike's cottage, because I think that even though they're longer pieces, between, you know, like the venue stuff being anywhere between 30 to 50 minutes in length.
Yeah.
I think when you listen to how things evolve throughout
okay.
the piece, really shows all of the different aspects of what is released throughout everything else.
Okay.
Because, you know, basically what I do when I record is I'll record, you know, like a 40, you know, for 45 minutes or half an hour, whatever I feel is necessary. And as you, you know, as you do with your podcast, where you fit in pieces of music at natural breaks,
yeah,
I think I find that, you know, when I record something for a half hour, there's either, you know, some really easy natural breaks between different movements that were recorded,
sure,
or it just sounds better as just like I'm leaving this as one solid piece. So, you know, it's like the live performances, you get the all of the different movements, and you get to see, you know, right in front of you or right in your ears mm-hmm. at that time, just how did something evolve from spot A to spot Z at the end of it.
You right. know,
it's like, and the alphabet's not always in order.
But no, I know what you mean, for sure. And you're also doing that in front of, people are actually in front of you watching this as it happens too, which has got to give it a different vibe as well. It's not you on the floor in your basement just making this happen, you know, day after day. This is it's presented for an audience that's physically there.
Yeah. And I also find that, I don't know, like I found it even beforehand in, you know, like when I was actually trying to write, you know, normal, quote unquote, normal songs with, yeah. you know, verse, chorus, bridge, verse, chorus, whatever, that when you're in front of when you're on stage in front of an audience, you feel like you're rushing everything.
Sure. I know the feeling. Yeah. Yeah.
Or you actually are rushing everything. And then at the end of it, you're like, oh my God, that was like, that 5 minute song should have been 5 minutes, but it was only 2 minutes
yeah.
on stage.
Yeah.
And it's just adrenaline. You're right. So, you know, like even if you're making, you know, something that, you know, at the end of it is going to be about a half hour, because, you know, it's like I have the advantage of whenever I play, I'm recording my set at
yeah.
the same time. So if I'm told you got a 30 minute set, I can actually like just go, all right, 30 minutes, stop. As opposed to, oh, we're at 30 minutes. We have to finish the song and not make it sound dumb
by
stopping it before it's ended.
Yeah.
Whereas I can just go, and thank you, good night.
yeah. And then you have a new album that's already
exactly.
finished. And, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's like, and then it's just, I find that, you know, like even myself with the yellow gadgets and whatnot, I still feel like I'm rushing or yeah. you know, going, am I doing this part too long? And then, you know, when I listen back going, oh, I could have really rode that a little bit longer and it would have been just like that much better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, it'd be like, you know, like, and for goodness sake, if anybody thinks I'm actually comparing myself to this, shut up, go away, turn yourself into whatever.
Yeah.
It's like a John Coltrane solo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just, it goes from here to there, this, that, all over the place. It doesn't matter. But I'm sure even he was sitting there going, did I go too long on this part?
Yeah.
Or was this part too fast or too short? Like, should I have brought this out a little bit longer and just rode that wave a little longer, or did I ride that wave too long?
It's actually interesting that you mentioned that, though, because I mean, especially with him, there's lots of records that have come out like in recent years where it's alternate versions of stuff that had already been released. So you can actually hear kind of the thought process of, is this too long? Maybe the B version has that same solo with that movement kind of extended or shortened, and you can sort of hear, like, you know, what was obviously the thought process. They're clearly improvised, but some of those elements, like they're different versions of it, and it's cool to have that as like a sort of a backup listen. It's like, oh cool, this is where it could have gone, and then this is what they chose to use as sort of the finished product.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's like, Coltrane's a fucking genius.
Oh yeah, unbelievable. Yeah,
doesn't matter whether it's a you know, what period of his work it is. Like, he was a fucking genius. It's just, you know, like myself personally, I really like the stuff that it's just like, what?
Yeah, me too. That's my favorite stuff of his, where it's just, you don't know what the hell's going on, but it sounds amazing, and you're just like super sucked into it. And I don't know if I said this many times before in the show, but I really like when you're listening to stuff like that, and it just sounds like pure chaos, and it's just sound being barraged by sound coming from all different directions, and it all sounds discordant, and it seems like it's wrong, but it still works. And then suddenly, like after 15 minutes of that, you just get this break where everyone's suddenly playing in unison, and even if it's like for a minute, all of a sudden they're just playing the same riff, and then it goes back to crazy. And it's just like that, the fact that moment is there, it just makes a song for me, because you know that, like, despite all of the raw noise that's happening and the chaos, that there's planning involved and there's structure to a certain extent, where these guys are this good at their instruments that they know all of a sudden, boom, we're into this part now, and then kind of unleashes back into the madness. I love that. I love that, those brief moments of clarity in something that's just pure noise.
Yeah. Well, I was like, I was talking to a coworker just on Monday about one of my favorite music listening experiences of all time. And it was one of those things where it's like, he looked at me just like, what? That's really? And it was basically, I can't remember exactly who the bands were that were playing at the exact point in time, but I was at Edge Fest at the old Assiniboia Downs.
Okay.
And there was the main stage act that you could listen to, and you could in one specific spot in where we were standing, we could hear the main stage, we could hear the second stage. Cool. Setting up, like doing their sound check. Yeah. And you could hear from the rafters the echoes from both. So you're literally being surrounded by all of the sound. And it was just like, I just remember just standing there in that spot, just like reveling in all these different sounds coming around my brain. And for all I know, it could have been, 'cause I know Creed played at that particular fest.
Yeah.
So did the Tea Party, and so did the Foo Fighters and Green Day, and yeah, a bunch of other bands that played. But it was just like that, like it could have been, you know, like it literally could have been like three bands or like two bands that I absolutely detested.
For sure.
Based on how theirs on how the two sounds were coming together with the echoes from the rafters was just like, oh, this is awesome. Nice. And it's just like, it's all about, you know, like just listening to sound, you know, it's like enjoy, like, you know, going out for a walk and listening to all the different sounds of nature around you if you're going on a nature walk.
Yeah.
You know, like everybody always talks about, it's like, well, I went on a hike and it was just awesome because I could hear the sound of the wind going through the trees and the birds and the insects that were flying through the air and everything else. Like, you know, it's the same thing with me with that particular moment. It was just, it happened to be live bands playing on stages and concrete rafter echoes.